The wisdom literature in Ecclesiastes is eternally true. There's a time for everything under the sun. Today we might reword that. There's a TV show for everything you can think of. Unbelievable stuff like Honey Boo Boo, the Kardashians, and the marriage gown thing. Gag. But the one that bothers me most is hoarders. In our Sun City days, our church had a ministry that was unique to that area, which involved selling the belongings of widows who died with no kin to leave it to. And so they left it to the church. And we had to do something with it, mostly get rid of it. But I'll never forget one house in that place. It was a nice house on the outside. Corner lot, desert landscape. But the inside was stuffed to the brim with so much junk that you could hardly move. And it took weeks to get rid of all that. There was a tiny pathway between stacks of books that were never read and unbelievable trinkets and 50 pairs of shoes never worn and 10 bathing suits still hanging on the rack. Never used, but it was there, taking up space. And it reminded me of the ongoing conflict I have with my good wife about buying things. I'm losing that battle. And have been for a long time. So she and I are just wired differently. I can get by with a lot less. So when I go to the grocery store, it's to get what I'm out of. Only that. And no more. Only that. And she comes in with four or five boxes of stuff slinging all over the place and no place to put it in case we might need it, which we usually do eventually. But far be it from me to say I'm glad. Sometimes when she's away, I'll slip and get rid of stuff. And she doesn't even miss it. Or I just put it someplace out of sight. I think it's because I have a knack for the obvious. Take care of what you have. When it breaks, it's no longer value anymore. Just toss it away. You know, get rid of it. Simple. Right? But then I got married, and the recipe changed. Now it's take care of what you have, then pile it in the closet or the garage and haul it around in the car, which becomes a movable closet. The latest surprise occurred just this morning when I got into the shower with a bunch of floating medicine bottles in a container. Floating. When I inquired as to what that might be, the reply was, to keep you on your toes. You'll have to ask her about that one. Floating medicine bottles. I had thrown them away. But every time we move, we get rid of stuff. And that's the good thing about moving. It's kind of cathartic. Stuff you no longer need. For a while... Everything is in place. And as soon those stuff starts accumulating, like that house in Sun City, if you have a place to put something, you're going to put something in it. Shelves, attics, corners, and God help those with a basement. Y'all know what I'm talking about? I suspect it's common in everybody's house and Joanne's elbow and heart. It's as ordinary as living in a family. We have things, and things get used, and then they get used up. And when the useful becomes useless, it's appropriate to dispose of it. But on rare occasions, somebody throws something away that is valuable. Sometimes it's a mistake, didn't mean to do it. Sometimes it's a life. So sad. When we lived in Portland, Oregon, we'd take those who came out to the Great Northwest to visit us. We'd always take them to the end of the Oregon Trail Interpretive Center. They didn't call it a museum. It was called an interpretive center. And it was housed in a huge Conestoga wagon. The building was built like a Conestoga wagon, complete with a canvas roof and all. And it portrayed a treacherous trek of those migrating westward who traversed the Great Plains and the Rockies and the snow. And they frequently had to unburden the wagons that were too full of stuff to continue on the route. And when they got to a place called Barlow Road, it was a unique place. Trees had stripes around it where ropes had scratched it. And it was near Mount Hood, and they had to lower wagons with ropes wrapped around the tree over a deep ravine, and some weighed a couple of tons, and they had to be reduced. And often the rope would break and they would crash below. But it was worth the gamble, because the advantage was it kept them from having to float down the perilous Columbia River Gorge. Now, the Bible knows about this. Jesus' disciples were on board a ship in a storm, and the boat was filling up, and they had to bail out the water or be swamped. In the book of Jonah, he was the cargo that had to be tossed overboard for survival's sake, as the story goes. In our case, it's the luxury of having too much. For those on the frontier, those in boats, it's a matter of life or death. Even that which was valuable had to go for the greater good. You understand that. This experience of lightening our load is the topic of our text this morning, the scripture lesson from Philippians. It fell to St. Paul to throw away something in his life that was very valuable. He wrote about it in a letter to his favorite church in Philippi. And old Paul loved that church. He has a revealing phrase about it that Bob read a moment ago, about how valuable his religious upbringing was to him. He said, "I have confidence in the flesh. If anyone else has confidence, I have far more. Circumcised on the eighth day of the nation Israel, of the tribe Benjamin, a Hebrew among Hebrews, as to the law a Pharisee, as to zeal a persecutor of the church, as to the righteousness found in the law, blameless." Paul was proud of his heritage. And you can just feel his pride coming out in these words. A Jew among Jews. He could outbrag any rabbi in town. He saw himself as wealthy, but not because of what he has. His pride lay in who he was. His genealogy, his connections, belonging to the house of Israel, meant everything to Paul. And rightly so. The Jews kept the flame of faith burning while the rest of the world was in darkness. Moses gave us the Ten Commandments. Ethical living followed that shaped three great Abrahamic religions. His pride in his identity was without peer. Now, around here, it's fashionable to rebel on college campuses. We know about that. It's fashionable to give up your early religious training and become the polar opposite. Well, this one guy went the other way. I saw this week where a rapper became Amish. But I come across people all the time who experiment with a different religion for notoriety. I recently heard an enlightened student who came to Brown as a secular humanist, and he tried them all and finally landed on the Islamic faith. Others just give up on God altogether. Their early church training, they just throw it out, especially if they were made to go to church. I just love that. I'll teach you to make me go to church. I'll become an atheist. And we see a lot of that. And I can't wait for freedom to jettison that old-fashioned stuff. So a Christian becomes a Jew. For spite. That's not how Paul got there. He wasn't a Jew because he gave up something in order to be Jewish. Paul was born a Jew. He got it through his mama's milk. He wasn't religious because his elitist buddies thought it was hip, circumcised on the eighth day. That wasn't cool. His tribe was Benjamin. It was the smallest in size of all the tribes in Israel, but gave Israel her first king for whom he got his name, Saul. He was proud of that. He wasn't ashamed of it. He was even proud of being a Pharisee. A lot of folks disparage, wrongly, I believe, not Paul. Because the word Pharisee is a harmless word. It just means somebody who loves the Bible. Somebody who tries to live by the Bible. And some in our day would make that something to be ashamed of, that we shouldn't do, but not Paul. When the temple was destroyed by the Babylonians, guess who came up with an idea of something never before heard of? A synagogue. Pharisees. They preserved the Hebrew faith in exile. We probably wouldn't even have a Bible today if it weren't for them. And they preserved their faith in a time of upheaval when there was no temple. And the faith could have been dispersed among pagan culture, but they prevented that. And Paul was proud of that. So he lived by the book. And whoever threatened the book or weakened the book, or mocked the book, was going to answer to him. Nobody could be more Jewish than Paul. His background, his training. And yet, this is the guy who said, I count it all as rubbish. This is not a man who regrets his past, or somebody that's burdened down with guilt, or about being privileged. He's not resentful of being made to go to church. He's proud of that. Thankful to his parents for being like that, for raising him that way. Everything Paul cited from his religious heritage made the world a better place. This is good stuff. All of it was admirable. But none of it is comparable to what we hear when some ne'er-do-well gets miraculously converted and has to give up drinking and drugs and sex and whatever and cleans up his life now that he's found Jesus. This is not foregoing bad habits stuff here. This is not lay the devil down theology here. Before he met Christ on the Damascus Road, you find only good things in Paul's life. Nevertheless, he counted it all
as loss.
Well, why throw away something good? That's my question. If it wasn't what we see on college campuses today, what else was it? Well, I reckon all my friends are quitting on God and denounce their parents' attempts to train up a child the way he should go and become an agnostic or something. It wasn't that. That wasn't Paul. Then why on earth? He didn't have to. Nobody made him. Any church would love to have Paul as one of their members. He wasn't afraid to get his hands dirty. He was honest. He was a social activist. He could sing and pray and preach and follow the Ten Commandments. And he was a tither. No church would say no to Paul. Or he could do like a lot of folks do. Just come to church and pick and choose what suits you. And who would have faulted him if he did that? Why throw away all the stuff that he just called good? It might have had something to do with Jesus. Y'all knew that Jesus was around in there someplace, didn't you? Paul did what Jesus did. He descended into greatness. He emptied himself, is the way he put it. He left heaven behind and became one of us. And was obedient to the death, even on a cross. Now, if Christ could do that, how can we do any less? That's Paul. One of the N words a while ago was upward mobility. You hear a lot about upward mobility. Well, that wasn't his direction. His is downward mobility. Seated at the right hand of God, Father in heaven, with all the perks therein, streets of gold, 10,000 angels, Mormon tabernacle choir, praise, joy, love. He said goodbye to all that to come down here to live and die among us, his frail children of light. How can we just tack on a little church here and there, just enough to ensure our destiny? How can we push our own agendas, our own achievements, when these two left all of that in the heavenly dump to become servants, to empty themselves? I think I know why Paul did that. Because he believed that if you're going to be a Christian, then you ought to be like Jesus. Good religion, the best religion there is as simple as that. Being like Jesus. And take all those other good things that we do to the dump. God keeps yelling, don't sweat the small stuff. Our pride in being correct. Our causes, our agendas, our calendars to which we may or may not add in a little church. Take it to the dump so we can be like Jesus. That's how Paul believed. Be like Jesus. Turn your nouns into verbs. To love, to faith, to give, to serve, to bless somebody. Now, don't get me wrong, Paul would be the first to admit he hadn't arrived yet. He has a long way to go to be like Jesus. But that is his goal. And I can't think of a better one for anybody. He is single-minded in trying to be like Jesus. Running is the image he uses. Running toward the finish line. Heart pumping, temples pounding, muscles aching, face sweating, striving, straining to be like Jesus. Now, we all know that Paul is a rare bird. Few people take Jesus as seriously as he did. But I got this bee in my bonnet to tell y'all about him in the context of the worship of God, because every once in a while somebody comes along like Paul who wants to be like Jesus. Just in case, it might be one of you.